What we want is we like to have our own meat and to put in the freezer. We used to can moose meat a long time ago. So you see nothing rot. Whatever we can dry, we dry them. But the things we used to, we can't keep, we used to can them too. Jars. We didn't wait for canning machine and everything. We buy jars and we put them away. Fishing way. We dry every little thing. And for dog food, we even used to, the fish guts and eggs, we used to hang them up and dry. For dog food, there was no waste. Here, oh boy, sometimes you see where white people have been, they've been fishing, and oh, they sure dirty up the creek and they feed all the fishes you can't, they don't want to bite anymore too. We don't throw things in the river, only a certain place. It has to be slew that water go up and where the, that you can keep it clean. Our villages have been clean long time ago, not anymore. Nowadays, it just young people, just like walking down the street, you see people smoking cigarette, and they drop it and step on it and go on. See these things, and it's just getting to be like that in this village and along here. I like to see all these things. I like to see everything that get back into rules like we used to do. And each village used to have chief. I like to see that come up again. A man don't have to be rich to be a chief. My father was the last chief that lived. There was a chief in Chitna. When he died, my father, all Chitna people, appoint him for Chitna and Lord Tansina chief. So everybody called him Chief Billam. My father was doing everything when he was young. He was a mail carrier, and he had ferry him and his father and brother. You see that sometime in the pictures, the ferry in Lower Tansina. When my father, my grandfather, they first meet white people, they had nothing to eat, and they walked long ways. They were going to Valdez, and here white people camp, they came up on. And white people look at them. And my grandfather just make motion, like nothing to eat. And then finally this white man understood and take them in. I think that was nice. Like Indians, I said, never take over other people's things. Wherever you go, you gotta depend on the village rules. My husband and I the same. We stay in our own place. We don't get into everybody's village. We don't take nothing out of their village. If we ask to go someplace, we go alone. And we do as what they say. So that's the way things were worked out good long time ago. That was good old days.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, Roy Ewan again. I'd just like to make one additional comment as I listen to some of the people talking here. And I don't think that I meant to overlook this issue that was brought up. That is the impact of the social impact on the communities in the state, the land claims had on the small communities. I could hear what the people are saying is that because of the land claims, the natives are economically better off, it seems now. And a lot of the people that used to have their way within the communities over the land don't have this anymore because it's all tied up with native land claims now. and the title is in the native hands, and it probably children in the schools nowadays are sort of ostracized because their dad's telling them that I have to go to natives now to cross their lands and stuff like that, which wasn't the way it was in the past. There were a lot of reasons. But you also got to look on the good side of the issue that the impact had. I think that the non-native people, through the retail marketing, whatever, received a lot of dollars through the land claim settlement. I don't think these things are properly information is gotten out to the people. You'd say, like, through the media that should or played on hard enough by the media to show that the land claims didn't only benefit the natives. I think that the cloud that stood over the land claims was cleared up. That benefited everybody. The state, the state of Alaska benefited. And but that negative thing that I see that is being brought up, I just beginning to have grandchildren going to school now. I don't have no kids in school, so I don't hear this every day, but I know there is prejudice in schools in this valley here, probably related to the land claims, because they are now economically better off than it used to. They don't look down on them like they used to, or can't say that you're like you're nothing, practically, like what we were. We didn't own land, we didn't have money, we didn't have jobs in the past. Now we're a little better off, and it just changed the whole social picture. And I'm sorry that this land claims had this impact. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ewan.
I'm Glenda Ewan. I just want to tell about I survived through the land claims. I sacrificed 4 years of my marriage for the land claims while Roy traveled all over the state and the lower 48. The first time was he went to work for a rural cap in 68, and ever since then, he was able to travel. I was glad for him that he was able to travel. And then in 69, we moved to Anchorage. And there, from there on, it was meetings all the time for different things leading up to the land claims. Then in 71, it was more traveling, this time to Washington, D.C., and different states like Kansas City and Chicago, Denver, some of the places I remember him traveling to. And, anyway, my marriage survived. I had my own job in Anchorage. We just had one daughter, so it wasn't that much hardship. I knew most of the AFN board members and lots of the other people that worked toward the settlement of land claims. And during the land claims, all of a sudden there was a lot of divorces. Then there were a crop of mixed marriages. 4 or 5 years later, there's a lot of divorces again. So now when I see some of them, we get together, we just joke about it, because Roy and I are still together after 27 years. For this reason, Roy had the respect of most of the AFN board and others. At one time, I remember Roy worked 18 consecutive days in Anchorage, on weekends and all. I helped by running errands for them from the meetings, like bringing them lunch. When there was a meeting in town and people used to come in from the villages, I'd fix up a big roast or something with the help of my friend Brenda Itta. We'd feed at least 50 to 100 people right in our own house that we were renting. Those little ways that I helped.
Well, sure you did. Thank you, Mrs. Ewan.
My name's Marco Pete from living in Glen Allen now. I'm concerned about jobs for young people. I seen that before the land claim land settlement or after, I seen a guy named Johnny Nicolai and Franklin George here in Gorkana. The other one live in Mentasta. I have seen that they work on the State Department Highway. They laid them off. They worked 3 years with season. And they never rehired them back. And a lot of these young people put their application in with Highway Department in Glen Allen. And they throw it away. I seen that happens. I don't know why it happens. Maybe there was a prejudice against us Indians. Like earlier it says, all our fathers, grandpas, and who else Indian here that work on the airports, roads, all the roads you can see here, they would been working on it. And here we are, we get after we done all the dirty works, the Indian debt, and then we got cut off. Now they got paved machineries, they got nice trucks, they don't care to hire Indians anymore. I see many young people that they put their application in, goes to the garbage. It never even reached in Juneau, I don't believe. I'm concerned about this. Our young people that are coming up. There's more than 2,000 young people here now. And here are people from outside just come up and goes to work just like that for the state. Even construction, I've been on construction for many years. Since 1947, I helped build Eielson Air Force Base, all the road construction, and I haven't seen our native people got turned down. And they says, you have no A card, they start with that. You're non-union, we can't hire you. Now it goes by A, B, C. If you don't have an A card, you can't go to work. You lack on your union paying, you can't go to work. I have worked for Matsu, Stephen and Son. I seen people that pays, make it up from the pipeline. They were up here 6 months and went back to California. And there they are, they came back sneaking up here, and they pay up their dues and go to work just like that. Here we are, we got maybe locals, white people, maybe 1,000, maybe 100 Indians or Union in the state. They're all lined up down there in the Union Hall. And they're local. They couldn't go to work. And here they come back from California and there they just go to work just like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
My name is Gerald Stevens. I'm a Dayan shareholder. I'm also a village shareholder of Dinyi Stevens Village. I now live in Copper Center. Before the Land Claim Act came along, I haven't seen very much problems or heard very many problems of the way we live, the Native peoples live, and then along came the land claim. And ever since the land claim came along, I see the Native peoples and their land, their culture, their heritage slowly drift away from them. I see on the maps where they put down our land, the Land Claim Act. It's a block here, a block there. One big block, and slowly, even up to now, the state, the federal, are still trying to chip away on our land, what they have, I think, given us, or at least passed to us. They are slowly chipping away, and they are even trying to make some passageways through our land to get to the state land. When 1991 comes along, I really don't know what would happen then. We've always, like I said, I'm from up on the Yukon. I'm not very familiar with the trapping areas around here, but up there, we've always gone out and trapped fish, hunt, killed when we had to. And slowly, fishing, we have to nowadays fish 3 days out of a week. We gotta go down to the river and pull our fish nets out or our fish wheels. And now our moose hunting seasons, it's cut down to maybe 2 days, 3 days. What's really bad about it is that we have to get a bull. In that 3 days, we have to find a bull. Or in that 3 days, we have to find a cow. And about the land claims. I don't see how it has helped us. I don't see how it has brought along few jobs. It's brought along little education. It's what I'm trying to say is that before the Land Claims Act, we had very little problems. Very little problems with our bilingual, very little problems with our cultural ways. and very little problems with the way we lived. And like some of you have said earlier, that it's not only bringing the younger folks down, but it's really brought down the older folks, because they crave for the moose meat, for the fish, and all that's been cut down. And I feel that that came along with the pipeline, the land claim, and all things.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens.
My name is Brad Iwan at Gulcano. Talk about land claim that was good for the people for a while. With pipeline start, the people started work only 3 years. A real activity was going on. I didn't work myself. I was retired already then. So I don't want to work for pipeline. So was help run this area for a while anyway, 3 years, and then everybody, other people take over. I don't know why. I see that today all around the line, all the people that work in security guard and just stays in a car up here every direction. I went down Glen Ellen one day, I see 3 security guards driving up there, parking on where Access Road, every place there. We could work for that. We could take care of the pipeline in this area instead of the other people, and they make enough money and left. I know one from Kukuna just left the other day. He says he had enough money to pay all his farm in outside and left. There's a lot of people around here who could run that security guard, and the people is just run out of job around here because they got too many people from Low 48 up here. They got so many up here, and you can't even walk in town in Anchorage when 25 years ago, when we was down there, just like our own town, we driving around and walk on the street, no police at all. Today, just everybody, you know, too many people, and you can't go out. I talk about the old days now. We never been in school, and we live by the country. We do our own thing, whatever we want to do today, you know. When the land claim start, everything's strict. We don't have a land before that. We thought that's our land before that. Before land claim, I thought that's my land for 60, 100 miles up this way. When I went out trapping, nobody bothered me. I went up there and just going up there and trapping, you know. I don't need no land. And BIA gave it to us 160 acres. I don't know for what. I don't believe in that. I want to sell it today. I can't even sell my land 160 acres without BIA notice. There's a lot of people want to buy it today. I don't know what I do way out in the woods there. 160 acres, it didn't help me down here. I want to get my money for today at they built house where I start there. You see at my house down there, a brand new house there. I have to pay $92,000. I don't know how much finance I have to pay on it. What would I pay with it? After I die, they took it back, another man will move in, and they're going to keep on paying for it. That's not right, I think, today, you know. I asked BIA to give us a house, and they wouldn't give us a house. I went down about 2-3 times in the office. I saw at my house got hole in my roof and hole in the floor, and everything I tell them. And it didn't work that way, so we suffer with this building here, what it is. Government give us the money in here, you know, longevity and everything, we have to pay with that for all year round. We didn't make nothing. I don't know what to live on today. It's everything going up high like a mountain, you know. You buy a can of pops for a dollar a can now. You know? I don't know about cigarette. I don't smoke them. Maybe $2 a pack or something. But we can't live by nothing today, you know. We get help, but that's not enough today, you know. We used to living pretty good before land claim. We don't need no money. We didn't have to need anything. Look, those other people say we have to live by country. We want to go out and get caribou. We get caribou. If we want get moose, we get moose. If we want to fishing, we get fishing. Today you can't even fishing down here in fish wheel. Even that one, they cut it down today. Those that don't need the fish, they don't have to have fish wheel today. It says, we used to dip net down here. We can't dip net either, too. We thought we owned this country. Every cent government bought this country. We don't know that somebody sold the land with us. We thought this our country and our land. We don't let nobody trap in our country. Today's up there. We are 30 miles where I trapping. I look around the lake there. Talk about cabin there. All whole anchorage, I guess. Just the house and boot harbor out there. Wasn't that, I thought I'm the boss there. I went up there, I ain't boss no more. That's state's land. And like our brother talk about over there, what's do any good that block, what we get the block land anyway, like a checkerboard on a diamond, you know? It's my land, it's not Kinnick's and that, where I got 160 acres, nobody petic. And 3-4 years ago, I was a building home up there, you know, built cabin for trap line. Here I am, I built a house, and that's a state's land. So I thought that's my land. I've been born 67 years ago. I know that right there where I camped. My daddy camped with me there, and that's state's land. I don't believe in that. I wish they could change everything its right way so we could be enjoy our life today. We wouldn't live long, but our grandson, our granddaughter, and our boys, these the guys going to use it today, you know. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ewan.
I'm Evelyn Pete from Chitna. Now is the time for me to say something good about the land claims. And I unfortunately only have one good thing. The good thing about the Land Claim Settlement Act is that it established the borders of our land. It went down to Congress and they knew that we meant we own all the land, what we claim in Otna. All the way up Mentasta, Gulkana, Chitna, Gulkona, Chestachina, Taslina, Nabesna, Salina, all the way up and down. So they had no doubt about it. But I think their United States government was pretty shocked. I don't think they believed us because they keep trying to take away our land. As Fred said, those checkerboard squares. I don't recognize those. I don't recognize regional corporation withdrawals and state withdrawals because I say that the state, Section 4 of the Statehood Act says the said state and its people further disclaim all right to land now held in trust by natives or now occupied or used by them. So what that means to me, since we use all this land that we put in our boundaries, that means that the state can own no land. But at least it did go down to Congress that we own it. But as another thing that Fred Ewan was saying, that they marked the land funny. They did that in Mentasta too. people were making claims that their grandparents and great-grandparents had used, and they mark them way almost a mile or two away from where they originally claimed. And that's the same with me and my native allotment down at Upper Tonsina. I have it on a spring. The reason I picked that land is because my Uncle Frank Billum and my Uncle Johnny Billum told me that there's a spring there that never freezes up in the winter time. And my great-grandfather used it, and Millie's great-grandfather used it. That's all our family. They say that that spot is, even earthquakes and floods, everything. Everything go through that land, that spring is always good. I went there this March month and I got some water from it. It wasn't even frozen. Snow was this deep. I had a hard time walking to it. But that's the reason I picked it. And on the map, BLM's map shows me a mile away. And another thing too, I have some land up at Bernard Creek. My great-grandfather built that, my great-great-grandfather built that relief cabin, telegraph line cabin. And I picked that land because I was told in my family history that he had built that. And that was always there. The idea of the cabin was to be always there in case you're hunting, you have a place to stay. So you can't get lost. You always have a place to go to. Just build a fire. They even had dried mushrooms and onions and things like that ready in there. I even saw flour in that place when I was a little girl. But the United States Army Corps of Engineers took that cabin off in 1966 and moved it to Fairbanks and put it on the Alaska Land exhibit. And I didn't know, at that time I was scared to fight United States. And I didn't do anything about it, but I told my dad and mom. Later, I didn't find out they took it until after 67. And I was out in California that time. But Dad told me that, well, they moved that cabin off. That's not yours. And I said, sure, it belongs to our family. But that fear that I'm talking about, the fear most of our people between right now, between 40 and 60 years old, are really afraid of the United States and the state of Alaska and most white people. That fear keeps them afraid of what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that we still own all this land. It still belongs to us. And we don't have to be afraid. Because my grandmother said, God gave us this land to protect. It's our responsibility and our right to protect it. And we don't have to be afraid. The really Christian people have told me, like Andrew Isaac said, if us young people stick together, stay together, work together, we can't be beat. We don't even have to fight. We stick together for the land, we can't lose it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Derry Town. I'm a resident of Gulkana Village. And I agree along with a lot of what Evelyn Pete had to say. But all in all, from what I can understand, see what happened in Alaska, from the selling of the land to the United States from Russia, I think that all in all, the Alaska Native's been ripped off, and because on the land they say that we own the land, but then it, again, there's a title to the state of Alaska, and to the government, and I believe that the Alaska Native Settlement Act was one of the greatest things that established, but I believe that for $3 an acre that was sold to form the Alaska Native Settlement Act, I believe that was pretty cheap myself. And from what Evelyn Pete had to say about God giving us this land, God gave us this land to live off of, I believe, to hunt and fish, to do anything that we wanted on our land. And the point I'm trying to get at right now is for the future, for the younger generation that's yet to grow up. We need to form a new establishment or a new government for the younger ones to look forward to live by, live under, and live in. And that's one of my main concerns is for the younger generation, the little ones. And because we have the corporations and everything to help us. But we need something more. We need something more established here, I believe. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Donna George again, and I'm from Copper Center. I just wanted to say, from all these testimonies you've heard today, I hope you guys do something and accomplish something that will benefit us natives. I don't want to see all our testimonies and everything go right back in the files. I hope from all the testimonies you've gotten in the Copper River that it'll work out. Something will be done for us native peoples. That's all I have to say, and thank you.
Chairman. My name is Millie Buck, and I'm a stockholder and also a board member of the Chitna Native Corporation, the non-merged village of Otna. And my main concern is about the 1991 issues. To me, when the native land claims was settled, so-called settled, I really don't feel that it was a fair settlement in land and money, as I know you've heard here before. For one thing, with 1991 in mind, Congress must have known that one of these days we will face 1991 to where we could lose our lands because of being taxed. Therefore, I feel that they might have given us money, but as for the land, you're always looking at it and feeling worried each time you look at it. I wonder if this is going to be mine after 1991. I wonder if we can even walk across it after 1991. And these things are really have been a great concern of mine since I work with Land for Chitna Corporation also. And it's always coming up. Be it stockholders or board members or whoever. And even at this point, sometimes you look around your land and you see people squatting on it or camping on it, just like they did before before the native land claims. But since the claims settlement, we kind of looked forward to people like BLM, who our lands were entrusted to until we got our title, to watch after these lands for us, but that has never happened. Instead, BLM has took us to court for about 3 acres of land which cost us money also. And that is why I say that with land and money, that it was really unfair too, in my eyes. The people who was supposed to protect us and our lands, to be taking us to court, making us spend the money so that we can fight to keep the lands that is supposed to be ours in the first place because we selected it. That is really, to me, not a settlement. Not if we have to go on fighting for our land right to the very end, to spend all of our monies, and then to have no monies left to work our land with. Those two go together. In my eyes, they have to. Because without money and these taxes coming up, how can you do anything with your land? How can you even put a business on it? So these two go together in my eyes. And another is BIA, which I feel also hasn't done their part by us as being the trust over us as yet. I feel with the native allotments in the villages, they also know that we cannot get our land conveyance as long as the native allotment issues are out there still unpatented. And they also are taking their good old time. So where is the settlement? I feel that they are really dragging their feet with our conveying our lands to us. It seems as though they just want to wait until, like I heard somebody here say they were chipping away at our land, and that is what is going on. Non-natives wants easement here, and they want easements there. It isn't that hard for them to get. They do get it. And here we sit back and watch and think, I wonder where is the land that we fought for before 1971 and was supposed to have won in 1971? Where is it? What's going on? Do we have any lands? Will we have any lands? I feel all of that is so unfair. And then the next issue that I'm also concerned about is subsistence. Subsistence is getting tighter, such as I'm talking about hunting and fishing. It's getting tighter rules and regulations all the time. I remember many years ago when I was a little girl in Chitna, we used to be the only ones fishing. The natives were the only ones fishing. And there was white people living there also, but they never bothered to fish. But since around 1971, I see a whole flock of people going into Chitna with their dip nets. I'd say there is about 3,000 campers that come in there in the month of June. And the fish and game is very liberal with their permits, their dip netting permits. There's no questions asked, and I've seen these non-native people go down there in big Winnebagos, taking as many fish as they want, nobody checking on them. Instead, the fish and game come to the natives, come under our fish racks where our fish are hanging, count the fish to see that we get exactly what our limits are. But I sat on the bridge many times in Chitna watching these people out of these $60,000 Winnebagos fishing. Nobody ever go to see if they even have a fish permit. And I've seen some of them come back even three times with one permit to take fish out of the river. Nobody watches them. They rather watch us. And these things are hard on especially our elderly people because they are being forced out of their best fishing spots where it would be easy for them to fish, where the people before them have fished. They are being forced out of those areas. They are being forced to where there's big banks where they can hardly get their fish wheels into the river. And old people just can't do that. And then they also have fish and game rules, like where you cannot share anymore. If we give a fish away to somebody and we got caught, we will be in trouble. And it's native way, sharing is a native way. We can't even do that anymore. We can't even help our elders. And that's the kind of fish and game rules we have to live under. And another one is the hunting areas. We approved easements on our lands with the assumption that our native people can go in there to hunt as long as we comply with the Alaska State Fish and Game. But going in there last fall, I seen where there was a lot of non-natives that was let in there to hunt. Again, our people were being forced out. No place to hunt. And my next issue is, I heard a lot about education here today, and I agree with everybody that who spoke before me. We are always told, well, why don't those bunch of Indians go out and do what we do? Well, those rich Indians, so-called rich Indians, they think that we're rich because of the Alaska Native land claims, and that's one of the impact that it's brought us. They don't realize that if some of us are fortunate enough to have worked that many years and buy a new car and we drive down the road, boy, look at that rich Indian, you know, he's got a new car from the Native land claims. And these kind of things we hear all the time, at least I do. I hear those kind of comments all the time, and those are not true. We have to work hard, maybe harder than most, to buy something like that. And education, people say, we have to be equal. Yeah, we are equal, I feel we are, but not education-wise. We do have education in our own way, in we need that equal education as the non-natives are getting. And in order to have that, the state is going to have to recognize us as a people first, which they do not at this time. And I really am pleased to see these young people here, to come up here to speak about the native land claims. It also kind of surprised me at how much they know, and I am really pleased about it. And these are the kids that I would like to see go further in education with the help of the state, because education is their business, and also with the federal government too, because they still have a trust over us as Indians. And for 1991, I would like to see a plan put together, however it may be, that we could be exempt from taxes on our lands. Then we would feel that we have had a land claim settlement. Otherwise, we don't have a settlement, not if we're going to always be worried about losing our land tomorrow. I think this is all I have to say, and I thank you very much.
I am a custodian for my brother. My brother has been ill since 1942. He got hurt, run into a tree getting up, and his neck was hurt, and the nurses didn't help. They sent him to jail instead of to a hospital. And then the Valdez Hospital, they sent him on to Portland, to Morningside Hospital. That is where they get awful treatment. They just call him crazy. Anyway, now that I'm taking care of his money and the land. My husband and I, we don't have no land of our own. A lot of people have land. And Teslina Village is just a little place there. But we're living on this native allotment. And I don't know what's going to happen to us. And we like to have it passed on to our children. We got three boys and we got one, two boys as well, but one, the eldest one, he was coughing, he had pneumonia. They said in Anchorage he died, and then when they got him back to hospital, and they revived him. And then when he came to, he was all right for a while, but when he got well from pneumonia, his brain was damaged. That was a little too far away. About doctors thought it was 15 or 25 minutes too long. Anyway, right now he's in API in Anchorage because he runs away. He wants to come home. He can stay at the Nicoya home, but they can't keep him in there. He runs away. He knows which way the road leads to home. He hitchhiked. He almost froze to death two times. Once they brought him to us, his hands and feet were red, and his neck and ears were all red. Anyway, right now, my brother is in the home too, in Anchorage. He's been everywhere. And I like to see that my brother get taken care of. So one man when this land claim started, one native man told me in Anchorage, and he said, why don't you ask to become a custodian for your own brother? You don't know what will happen to him. Someday they might take all his money. Well, right now, anyway, so I agree, and my husband let me. My husband don't let me work. When he was working, he wants to be the breadwinner. So I always obey my father and mother. And then when I got married, I was told to obey my husband. So I did. And then this one, I told him I really want to take that job. He is my only brother. And he don't remember me because of what happened to him, because the nurse and doctors didn't help him. They put him in jail and got worse and almost died. And then he got well, and then when he came back, he don't remember nothing. All he know is how to eat and how to go to the bathroom and dress, that's all. When we go see him, he don't know who we are. Anyway, right now, he had a little too much money for the home. And so they told me that they gotta get his money back down to $1,500. And they told us, don't touch Ewan's money. Don't use it. Well, I told him at the court, and there was a meeting. They went to one of the ladies, went to where I was going to speak, and how we Indians never take from each other, but sure, be kind to one another. Well, that's the way I feel about my brother. He's my brother. He's the only brother I got, and I got, if nobody else care for him, who else would be? We don't know what they do to him at the home. I know they rough with him out when we visit him at the Portland. This man was rough. He was a, what you calling that nurse, man nurse. He was rough with him, bringing him to us. He get off the path and they pull him back and throw him around. Anyway, so I decided to become a custodian for my brother. Right now, his money's gonna go back to $1,500. Well, they told us not to use it. Here I work for all that money, all these monies. I am the one that make money for him. I let people stay in our land, even though they dirty our yard and our land where they're parked. Those that came to the pipeline to work for. And so I put all Ewan's money in the bank, and it went up to $1,900 and over. So right now, all we're going to ask for is our prayer mileage and all these that, how many days we go for him into town. That was, we count only about 3 days since I started as custodian. First, I was just conservator. Now I am a custodian. Like I said, I never been to high school. I never been to college. But they approve of me down there at the court. They said, I'm doing good at figuring and everything. So they want me to keep the shop. And then my husband's getting tired of me telling him where to go and all. I run around town here and there for him, for my brother, even though he don't help me. So that's what I'm talking about. I like to have a land of my own, but I didn't get no land. This is my land, and it's been sold, and it's belonged to pipeline, but I got nothing. My brother's land is a land of BIA by. But what will happen to it when he passed away? I hope that will stay. That's all.
I wanted to add a bit more. Shall I repeat my name?
Boston?
Right.
No, you don't have to.
Okay. Concerning the elderly people, I feel that they don't have very many years to live. I feel that the regions should set up a cash compensation for them so that they can get some enjoyment. Some monetary enjoyment before they pass on. And oftentimes when we have a death, we have problems in buying caskets and whatnot. I feel that a burial fund should be set up. And I've heard all day this talk about Russia selling the land to the United States government. I would like to say that if Congress had read and studied Alaskan history, they would discover that Russia did not sell the land. They sold the buildings that were built by them and treaty rights. So in effect, the United States government is trespassing today on Indian land. Thank you.
Well, this has been a good discussion and a well-informed discussion, I may say. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak while we're here? Well, I want to thank you all for coming this afternoon, and I want you to know that I paid close attention to what each person said, and I think that it was an afternoon in which people spoke in a well-informed way about these issues. And each village we go to, I think we're all, I know that sometimes I am, and the people traveling with me are surprised at how well-informed you are, and how much thought you've given to these issues. And I do appreciate the contributions you've made to the discussion today, and I want you to thank you for inviting us to Gulkana. And After we visited all the regions and held meetings, I will be writing a report that will be made public, and it will be coming back to you. And in the meantime, when the transcript of what was said here this afternoon is ready and typed up, we will send that back here to Gulkana, so you will have a permanent record of this afternoon's proceedings. So I want to thank you again and declare the meeting adjourned. Well, we're supposed to meet in Fairbanks next week at the University of Fairbanks. The native students at the university asked us to...
There's no other meeting in this area.
We had a meeting at Copper Center yesterday, this meeting at Gulkana today, and we can't go to all the villages. We said we would go to some so that we would hear a representative cross-section of views.
Do you have separate written statements?
Oh, yes, sure. Just send them in the mail to us, if you like. No, that's no problem. Well,